Welcome to Michigan Ice Guys, podcasting to help you fish hard water better. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of MI Ice Guys, hard water fishing in the Great Lakes State. Well, today we've got a new member. Finally, our third member has pulled himself away from competitions, from fishing, and his duties as a father to come down and join us, and we have the illustrious Chad with us. Say hello to everybody, Chad.
Hello.
Now, Chad, you've been fishing for quite a while with us, and you have the habit probably worse than any of us, and that's why we haven't been able to get you into the podcast as much as lately. But I thought we'd start out today talking about where we've been fishing lately. Now, I know last night, Steph and I went with our buddy Mike out on Reed's Lake, and you and Steph's brother Al, the illustrious Al, were out there, what was that, Thursday or Friday?
I think last Friday.
Yeah. We out there. Yeah, and you guys found some crappie out there.
Oh, yeah, we had to drill some holes, but we eventually found them. We just, I don't know, probably drilled about 40 holes. Al followed me with the fish finder, and we found that school and just tried to stay on them. And I think we were out there for 2 hours and had our limit. So it was a pretty good day.
Yeah, that was pretty similar to the story we had last night. We were out there for, I don't know, hour and a half, hour 45, and filled our buckets. And then it got to that illustrious time when those crappie just quit. And
yeah, as soon as the sun set, they just turned off.
Yeah, and then, Steph, you went out back again tonight, and it was the same program?
Yeah, same thing. Yeah. They were, you just, out there in about 40 feet of water, you just look for them suspended. They'll be about 6-8 foot thick. And chartreuse was a hot color. Bam, you go down to them, and they were smoking it.
Yeah, that orange belly greenhead with a chartreuse tail was working for me last night, too. Now, you been doing anything up around the house there, Chad?
We've been fishing Croton Pond quite a bit on the little side, and usually you pull a good limit of fish out of there. Getting a few fish over 9 inches, bluegills, that is. And the crappies aren't nothing special, but you get them up to probably 11. But we're usually just focused on the bluegills because, you know, they fight good, and they're big ones out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's been a real good season compared to last year for us.
Yeah, we got ice. Yeah.
We've got ice, and, you know, there's going to be people out there, and there were people even telling me today, are you sure the ice is safe out there? And, you know, last night when we were drilling holes through, we were better than 18 inches of ice.
Oh, yeah. A lot of ice out there right now.
And, you know, the poor guy with the hand auger that's going through that, he really knows that it's safe ice. Even on Reed's Lake last night, we saw quads out there. So it's still safe, guys. Don't put your equipment away yet. There's some good stuff going on out there. Always take a look at that ice before you go out. And if you're not sure and there's nobody else on that lake, walk just a few feet out and drill a hole just to check it out and make sure that you're not near a spring or something like that. You always want to be safe, but this time of the year, there's usually a hell of a lot of ice out there for you.
Yeah. The only things you want to watch out for is on these warmer days where it's breaking above freezing and that sun's coming out, you notice a lot of melt-off on the roads. Well, your feeder streams and stuff are going to have a lot of that flow, and if your lake is fed by one of those are the areas of concern where you'd want to watch out for.
Yeah.
But other than that, the lake should be solid.
The feeder ice. Streams and the probably the storm drains and things like that, and anywhere near where there might be a big parking lot or something, you gotta watch that, and there might be some hazardous parts around the edge and stuff. Now, some other things that we've been talking about. Well, we are definitely into the season of suspended crappie, and we were watching last night when we were out that they're usually running pretty thick, and the way I was fishing them was working the top edge of them and just kind of luring one off and jigging until it pissed him off until it hit it.
Yep. Yeah, working that the top fish, because I was trying to show Mike there. He was just dropping down into him, and he wasn't doing nothing. And I'm like, no. You just bring it up above him, get one interested, pull it away from him, hold it right there, bam. And you saw, they call me the fish whisperer because I'd have to talk them all the way through it.
Not yeah.
Hook one.
Well, there was times when I was a fish swearing last night.
I do that quite often. I talk to the fish.
Oh, I believe they can hear you.
Well, they should.
They can hear you.
But crappie always feed up, so you got to fish the top.
Yep.
And now the colors. Now, we went up in size last night in lures. We went up to the 4 mils, and then you pulled out the 6 mil for a little while there.
Yep.
That kind of works this time of the year. Just weed out the little fish.
Yeah.
Kind of give them a little bit more.
And when fishing that deep of water, it's nice to be able to drop right down to them and stay on them, keep them interested.
Yeah, no, those bigger tungstens really get you back to the pack fast so that you can keep pulling fish when you're on them. Now, we were talking earlier, Chad mentioned kind of drilling a bunch of holes and chasing the school around, and I was doing a bit of that last night, and I know you were too, of popping around all these different holes and find out where they went to. I think we had a predator rolling around in there that was moving the school around a bit. So, and we know, and we've talked about before, those muskie that kind of show their face once in a while in that lake. And we know that those guys are getting some pretty good pike on tip-ups. You guys been doing much on tip-ups lately?
It's been pretty slow for us the last few times out, but we had been doing really well. But I've been gone a lot to Worlds and to everything else, so I haven't been out fishing that much around here.
Well, you got that, what was it, 36 or 38 a little earlier in the season?
I've got, I think the biggest one's 35 and a half, but I've got at least a dozen of them over 30 this year.
Yeah. Now, we had one of our listeners, I've got to post the picture. I've been kind of busy and haven't got to that, that turned one in that looked like that sucker was up around 40, and that was a hell of a good-looking northern. I think I showed Steph the picture out on the ice last night. That was a good deal. Some of the other things that we've been working as we're working those holes, and your electronics are going to be really, really beneficial there. If you don't have the electronics, I guess probably the best advice that we can give you is just kind of find bottom and start working your way up. If you think you're in deep water where the crappie are, just kind of work until you get there. And when you get there, use one of the old school tricks to mark your line, or, you know, arm over arm it and get it out to a specific depth or something. You got any other good tricks, Chad?
Well, the spinning reels have the little line tab on them. You can, once you get a fish, you can hook the line onto the tab, or if you're running a schoolie, they got pegs on them. You can set the depth, or just if there's people out there catching fish and they got fish finders, ask them what's going on, or just talk to them. Most people are pretty friendly. They'll give you some idea of depth and give you some idea where to start fishing.
Well, you know, I'm always an aficionado of having a few beers in the bucket, and you can always loosen somebody's lip with a good, fine Michigan beer.
Well, yeah.
Now, you were talking about the tab. Now, for you guys that don't know what the tab is, if you look on the outside of your spool on a spinning reel, on an open-face spinning reel, there's usually a little plastic place where you can hook that line under on there, and that's the tab that Chad's talking about. Now, the schoolies, those are those old
just a
plastic reel.
Straight line reel.
As Steph clearly pointed out as we were in 40 feet of water last night, well, it's a one-to-one crank. I'm like, yeah, buddy.
But you don't kill the fish when you reel them up in that deep of water either. That's another advantage.
Hey, when they get to my Rapala fillet knife, they're dead anyway. So,
the ones you're throwing back, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just catch big ones. But anyway, there's some tricks that you can use out there, and we're definitely advocates of the electronics, but there's some skill sets out there that we remember from our dads and everybody else when we were kids that we go back to from time to time. And when we get into the next segment, we're going to talk about the Worlds. Chad's just back from the Worlds, and we're going to touch on some of the differences of fishing the Worlds over fishing the others. We talked briefly on that. What Steph brought us a little bit up to speed on that last episode. But this next episode, we're going to talk more into that, and we'll be right back after we fill our beers. So we're the MI Ice Guys, MIIceGuys.com. Remember, we got an ice map. We got some product reviews. We got a lot of good stuff going on. So hope you'll get out there and check it out. How would you like your business to be part of MI Ice Guys? We're always looking for sponsors to help us pay the bills, get us out there on the ice a little more, and get you the exposure you need. Whether your business is related to ice fishing, or you just think that ice fishermen would like to know about you, drop us a line at report@miiceguys.com. And we'll get you in contact with the right people to see what we can do to work together. Once again, that's miiceguys.com, and you can contact us there at any time. Hey guys, welcome back to MI Ice Guys. We're going to get into the Worlds. Now, not everybody out there, unless you've been paying attention to us, knows, or that you were living in Wisconsin and reading the Wisconsin small town Wisconsin newspapers that I had to go to find out information about what was going on over there. We really got to speak to those guys that run this world thing about getting a better information website, because those of us that we consider ourselves, you know, remote spectators, we were starving for information. I'm pounding you guys on Facebook going, hey, what the hell is going on out there and stuff? But the World Fishing Ice Fishing Competition was held this year in the United States in Wisconsin. And our good buddy Chad, he medaled. He got his individual medal. So we're claiming he's ranked number 3 in the world ice fisherman. Now, that's some big shiz. Now, we had another guy from Michigan.
Mike Bodecker, I think 4 years ago.
Yeah, 2010.
Yeah, 2010. Got the individual gold medal. So he was the number 1 guy for a little while. He ended up 18th this year. But, I mean, it was a fight out there. It was tough.
Well, from what Steph was telling us last episode, it's all manual, man. No electronics, no power tools.
No power anything. No GPS, no cell phones, no power auger, which I really, really missed. I'd rather have that than the fish finder, because there's about 28 inches of ice. But it was tough out there. You were hurting when you were done.
Well, now, it's really interesting to me that these guys go out there, and we talked a little bit about the auger that you were using. Now, it's Steph's Finbore,
yep.
Right?
Yep, it's Finbore Pro 3. It's even purple. But it cuts a hole better than any other auger we can get around here, or in the U.S., I think.
Now, it was a phenomenal thing when we had it hooked to Steph's drill in that 28-volt Milwaukee. But now, you had to run that thing manual?
Yeah, I think it took about 21 to 23 turns to get it through the ice.
Now, that's nice. That's a serious ice fisherman that's counting the turns. Because I know that when I'm out there, I'm going, one, damn it, one, two, damn it, and going through there. But now, you were running a pro handle on there, not what we see on our lasers and our Moras.
No, I was running the European style, the speed handle, some people call it. But it's just you spin both hands at the same time, so you get a little more aggressive, a little bit quicker turn each time.
So instead of one D shape on it, it's got opposing D shapes?
Yep, they're just a little bit offset, so you spin both hands, you get a little bit quicker.
How do you not knock yourself in the head with that?
The hardest part's keeping the auger straight through the ice. It likes to wobble if you're not turning at the right time. It takes a little practice. Not a lot, but a little bit.
You gotta keep both. Do you work out with weights for that?
Oh, no. I probably should, but I don't.
Well, maybe next year you can do that and get a gold out of that.
Those offset handles take some getting used to. I prefer the 28-volt Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm loving the 28-volt Milwaukee. I had the Briggs & Stratton fired up yesterday. I'll stick with those. I'll just be a correspondent to the Worlds.
I tried a titanium auger from Russia that they make. That was really tough on me. It was a counterclockwise turn and with the offset handles, but it was the most aggressive auger I've ever seen or had in my hands. I couldn't get one out of them, though. I tried crazy.
That Milwaukee's got reverse.
Well, yeah. I tried to get one off of them, but
maybe that'll be your mission next year when over there. Get us a couple of those. That'd be great.
A couple. I'm hoping for one. That's hard enough. I'll start with one, then we'll go for two next time.
The ice guys might need one. But now, it's different from the other two-man competitions that you guys normally fish in that you guys are – there's one representative per country in a zone?
Yep. We're in – I think the zones were 120 yards by 70 or 80 yards, and there was one guy from every country in the zone. There's five zones. And it's like golf. You get first, you get 1 point. You get 11th, you get 11 points. You don't want points. And cool. It goes by weight.
Now, it's just as many fish as you can get through the ice in the time
frame. State limit. 25. We go overseas, though. You might catch 150 fish in 3 hours, and you keep everything that comes out of that hole, except for game fish. No walleye or pike. They call them Xanders. Xander's a walleye. I don't even know what a pike's called over there. It's a pike.
We're going to have to sponsor you to get a copy of Rosetta Stone so you can start talking.
I need one. I need Russian, the Russian Rosetta Stone.
Now, Steph, you were out there, and you were actually working as an official, right?
Yeah, on day two, we had a Kazakhstan judge in my zone. And it was interesting. I mean, he wanted something to drink, some water. So I'm like, I got permission. I'm an official, so I could leave the zone and go out and get one. So I went out and got him a water. You know, we could meet languages on that one, but we didn't have anything to contest. One of the Polish coaches there, he was trying to tell me something about augers and changing it with his guy. And between him showing me the auger and not speaking any English, I'm like, yeah, I know what you mean. If you want to switch augers with him, see me.
That's crazy. Now, one of your other jobs was to make sure that people weren't fishing too close together.
Yeah, we had a 5-meter rope with us, and you'd measure off the flags hole to hole, so that the guys know where to drill and where they can fish.
Now, if you guys didn't hear us on the last episode, we were just given a little briefing there by Steph about how, you know, before you drill a hole, you essentially got to plant your flag.
You have to put your flag down. You have to drill your hole within 12 inches of the flag. And your hole better be 5 meters from the next guys, or you're getting yellow carded. Yellow card stays with you for 3 years. If you get another one, you're banned for 5 years, and you lose all your fish that you caught for your team, your country that day.
Okay, now that really sucks.
Severe penalty.
Yeah.
So they're asking for measurements, and that's why we're there.
So the official would measure to know if it was right. Okay, cool.
If you're in doubt, you better get a measurement. You get patted down, basically. Well, they don't normally pat you down. I got patted down on day two by one of the other country members.
Looking a little sneaky, are you?
Yeah. They don't want you to. They're more worried about how much bait you're bringing in. You can bring in 1 liter of wet bait and 2 liters of dry bait. Wet bait is like your spikes, your wax worms, anything that was legal and in the rules for this was like wax worms, spikes, red worms, basic stuff like that. But overseas, it's blood worms and spikes. But your dry bait is your ground bait, your whatever you're trying to attract fish with. They use a lot of corn. Well, over here they tried corn. Overseas, it's a lot of breads and a lot of just bread mixtures and sweets and fish oils. It's all kinds of crazy concoctions. Some of the countries bring little scientists with them to figure out, dissect the fish, see what they got in them, and figure out the special blend.
I got a Rapella. Can you take me overseas with you? I'll go to Belarus with you, and I'll dissect the fish for you.
Oh, yeah, that'd be helpful. We got an English guy, Lee Young, that has been pretty experienced with chumming and baiting of fish. He's did a lot of carp competitions overseas. We're trying to get him to come with us.
Oh, he's going to be the U.S. scientist?
Oh, we're hoping so. He knows what he's doing.
Well, that'd be cool. Maybe he could also be astute enough to get us some updates back here, and so we'd know what was going on, because the MI Ice Guys audience is just thirsty for information on this stuff. Now, some of the other things that you were talking about with it is that the individual medals. Now, how did they decide who gets an individual medal? Was it just on your personal points?
Yeah, it's your personal points. What it is what how many points you get for your country in each zone. Like on day one, I got 5 points. I got fifth place. And then on day two, I got first place. So I had 6 combined points for the 2 days. There was 5 or 6 guys tied with 6 points. There was one guy that had 4 points, one guy that had 5 points. So I was technically tied for third, but then it goes to weight. And I had the biggest catch for anybody. I had the biggest weight out of every competitor that there was. And so that's the tiebreaker. So I got
third.
So
they put in their magic formula and out comes Chad. Yeah. You get a medal. Cool.
I think I had 867 grams, something like that.
He had more weight than 2 other countries combined for 2 days.
Oh, my. Well, we're going to definitely have to get a picture of that and post that up on the MI Ice Guys. Maybe you were saying something about we needed a more modern picture of you. Maybe we'll have to find one with that on it.
I think that one's, 5, 6 years old, the picture you got?
Well, you know, I think we were all out drinking and fishing one day, and I just had to happen to have a camera. Now, overall on the teams, how did the U.S. do?
We ended up, we were in 7th place after day one. We really struggled. We just, what was working for us pre-fishing was not working on tournament day. And then on day two, we came back and fell 2 points short of the bronze and 2.5 points short of the silver. We ended up in 4th place overall.
Well, that's none too shabby. 11 teams, though?
Yep, 11 countries.
That's a hell of a comeback for day two. That's pretty cool. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about where the world competition's going from here. So, guys, don't go anywhere. We got to do a little bit of an intermission here. We need to refill Chad's beer, at least. And then we'll be right back. MII's, guys. Check out our website. Check out the product reviews. And soon, that picture of Chad's bronze medal when we come back. MIIceGuys.com. Guys, I wanted to take a moment and tell you about a new feature on MIIce Guys. Photos. We're going to do a photo gallery. If you have a great picture of you, your catch, your buddies, whoever, as long as it's got to do with ice fishing, send it to photos at MIIceGuys.com. And hey, if we like it, it looks good, we'll put her up on the page. So once again, that's photos at MIIceGuys.com. Guys, welcome back to MIIce Guys. We've been talking with Chad and Steph about their adventures out in Wisconsin at the World Ice Fishing Championships. And it's just an awesome, interesting thing for me to hear about. And we've heard a little bit about how it goes and everything like that. But where is it going in the future? Now, I know that next year, Belarus.
Belarus next year.
And what are you going to fish for in Belarus? Because they don't have bluegill, right?
No, they don't have bluegills. It's going to be what they call a roach, and that's basically like a little shiner minnow, about 4 inches long. And then they got bream, which is kind of looks like a whitefish, but I don't know, it's more of a minnow. And they're going to be, I've heard, up to 2 kilos, which, you know, is pretty big fish.
That's a pretty big fish, yeah.
But those are few and far between.
So you're not flaying a lot of these for dinner afterwards?
They keep everything that you catch, and they cook them whole. Guts, scales, bone, everything. It just goes in a big pot.
Mmm. Better be a lot of veggies in there.
They look back at you when you eat them.
Yeah. I had carp in Kazakhstan. I had every bit of it. It was still there, but it was good to eat. It tasted good.
Cool. Now, there's I've read things. I've heard you guys talk about it. They're pushing to get this to be an Olympic sport.
Yep. They're trying real hard, so they had to adapt drug testing this year to meet the criterias of the Olympics.
Oh, so you had to fill the cup.
Yeah. They took the individual gold medal winner, and I think they took 2 of the winning team members, which is Russia, and then I think they picked 1 random guy. I don't know who the random person was. It wasn't me. So they took 4 of them up to a hotel room and made them pee in a cup to make sure they don't have any performance-enhancing drugs in their system.
Now, the first question I asked you earlier was, what performance-enhancing drugs would you be worried about? But then you pointed out these guys run across the ice to get to their holes.
Yeah, all the European countries, their people are usually skinny. So it's kind of, we look a little bit odd. But they're skinny and in shape and run and drill a lot of holes. But nobody thought anybody was drugging themselves to get an advantage. That was just they're trying to meet the Olympic criteria.
So, I mean, this is a real thing that maybe in not maybe the next – is it going to be as early as the next Winter Olympics?
I have no idea where they're at in the process. I know they share a building. Our FISPA organization, the head of the World Ice Fishing Classic or Championship, share a building with the Olympic committee. So,
so they
got a little bit of pull, I think, but I don't know how much.
They've got access to the drug testing lab and stuff like that, and
they
same meetings.
They know each other. Okay. They know each other, so we'll see.
Now, you know, Steph pointed out that you know they section off these big areas, and then when the whistle blows or whatever, it's you run out and plant your flag and drill your hole, and as you pointed out, 28 inches of ice cranking through there. I mean, that it does lend to a little bit of athletic nature being required. And
yeah, you got to be able to drill a hole, and you got to be able to move around.
I got video that we'll post on our site, so I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
Because as an official, I got to be right up by the competitors. So right when the clock started, I got video rolling on my iPhone.
What did it take them, like 8-9 seconds to drill a hole?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So, I mean, we're motoring through the ice.
That's awesome. You know, it it's hard for me to imagine guys like Myron and Bodecker, some of these guys, that because a lot of our American team, they're retired guys. Yeah.
Bodecker will surprise you, though. He's one of the faster drilling members of the team. I think I can give him a run for his money, but he can beat most of them.
Wow. Wow. That, I got to see that. Maybe when we get going on this summer, we were just joking on our intermission there about the fact we may have to throw a little fundraiser, an MI Ice Guys in the summer fundraiser, to pay the way for Chad, you know, our ice guy, to go to Belarus if he can get qualified. That's not going to be a problem, is it?
I don't think that'll be a problem, but you never know. I leave tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. to head to Wisconsin, so we'll see what happens.
And, man, go out there and crank some holes and catch some more fish, and it's a rough life you've got, I'm telling you what.
They kind of hinted that I'm on the team, but I got to show up still, I think.
Well, and Belarus probably isn't a cheap airline ticket, so no. You guys are going to want to pay attention and keep subscribed to the MI Ice Guys website, because we might throw a pig roast. Steph and I have a pretty good resume of cooking hogs. You know, and you might come out and hear it, and then we were joking that we may produce some videos, too. We have some friends in the food distribution industry that have some big, giant freezers, so maybe we can shoot a video of Chad practicing in the summer in the freezer.
I need to practice a palm rod to compete with them guys overseas. They hand line it with a little palm rod. We'll have to get a picture of that on the website. Oh, yeah.
Sitting on a bucket.
Oh, no bucket. You're on no your bucket. Hands and your knees. You want to be as close to that hole, as close to the action, as you would call it, as possible.
That's awesome, man. The knee pads in your suit got to really pay off then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the guys wear actual knee pads like you'd use for cement work or whatever. They're strapped right to their suits.
They'll have 4 inches of foam padding on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some of those guys are a little older than you, Chad.
Well, most of the other competitors are in their 30s, I would say. Most of them are in their 30s.
Now, which suit did you wear?
We had a Cabela's Gore-Tex, the blue suit from Cabela's.
It's so the team uniform.
Yeah, it's a team. That's one of the sponsors for the team. We all have the same suit on. We pretty much all have a Strike Master auger of some kind, and we got our own equipment, but we try to look alike, at least.
Oh, pose for the pictures and such. We're going to have to get a bunch of those pictures posted up on the Ice Guys.
Got to pose for the sponsors.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
So are you becoming the Jimmy Johnson or Jeff Gordon of ice fishing?
Not quite yet.
But if the sponsors are out there, you're willing?
Well, yeah, I got a lot of room in my coat, so sure. Steph does too.
Steph's
so.
Got a hell of a lot of room on his coat. And, you know, my coat, when I get a coat, is going to have a hell of a lot of room on it too. So any of you guys that are listening out there, if you want your logo on us, get a hold of us. We are walking billboards. But it's really interesting, and I'm wondering how they're ever going to televise this. We were joking earlier about putting the GoPro cameras down. I watched an episode of Babe Winkleman's Good Fishing the other day, and they had a GoPro under the ice. And we're talking about this week. I know you're going to be off qualifying for Worlds, but Steph and I are going to go out, and we've got a friend that's a professional videographer, and he wants to give it a try as bad as we want to see the footage, so... Anybody else that's out there that's got one of these GoPros, throw that thing down a hole, man. I want to see some of this video. I think this could be very, very cool. And, you know, on the educational format, too, we can chalk that up there, too. So, guys, World Ice Fishing Competition, and our goals as MI Ice Guys, as correspondents, is we're going to try and figure out a better way for Chad to get us information from Belarus next year so that we can keep you in tune.
Hopefully they have Wi-Fi.
Well, Wi-Fi, hardwire, something. We'll have to figure something out for you. But we want to keep you guys in touch with that as well. When we come back, we're going to talk some more ice fishing. We're going to grab a couple of beers, so stay right there. Hey, when I'm heading out fishing, I want to grab me a couple of beers. I like to have pop top off one, and my choice is Schmoe's. Bone Crusher, Treasure Chest, Hop Knocker if you dare, Amber Tees, IPA, and Pale Ale. grab the Brewer's Six. It'll do you well out on the ice, and you can even share with your pals. So stop by your local bottle shop and grab some schmoes. See you out there on the ice, guys. Drive safe. Hey guys, welcome back to MI Ice Guys, hard water fishing in the Great Lakes State. But today we're kind of going wild and going international. Chad, you've come back from the Worlds and you kind of alluded to some things, especially that Russian auger that we all now want one. But what other equipment was really different from what we can just run to Gander or Cabela's or get through our online sources or at our local bait shop here in Michigan?
Well, a lot of the countries make their own Mermuska jigs, which is just a hole in the head tungsten jig. They mold their own, and they'll go as far. They don't use fish finders or power equipment. They'll go as far as if they're missing fish with that jig, but they're hitting it good, they'll change the hook out. That's how they do stuff. They'd rather... They go by as many bites to hookup ratio as they can. So they'll change the hook out, the gap, the shank, everything. And so, I mean, they fine-tune every little tiny detail. And they use, I mean, half-pound test line that breaks at a half-pound test. Stuff that we can't even get. I mean, we've got some Stroff line that we've got from England, I think it is. And now we're getting some Sun line from Japan. And they're a lot better than the U.S. manufactured lines. For as far as line diameter, because in line diameter is only, these are 2 millimeter, 1 millimeter and 3/4 jigs. I mean, they're the tiniest jig you can even imagine. Nothing that you can buy anywhere. When people see my jig box, they're like, well, where do you get these things? I'm like, well, I got that from the Belarusian gold medal winner, and they weren't there this year, so I couldn't get any more. And they're still too big.
Wow. Now, when you say that they're making their own, I mean, do they have a team workshop or something where they're building this stuff, or do they have a manufacturer that's working with them?
It's just the individual. I don't know how they got tungsten molds that, I mean, I think it has to be at like 6,000 degrees or 7,000 degrees to melt down tungsten. I don't know how these guys are doing it, but they're getting it somewhere, and they're putting, I don't know if they're just putting the hooks in, but you cannot find these jigs anywhere but overseas. Russia and Belarus, Ukraine, I mean, those are the countries that make them, and we'll sell them to you over there for $4 a piece.
Well, you were talking earlier about some of these fish that you're catching in Belarus and stuff. I mean, they're smaller than some of the minnows that we use.
Yep. Well, if you went to your local bait shop and looked at the golden shiners, and then if they had blue shiners, the walleye shiners that are about 3 inches, it'd be in between those two sizes. And you will get some. Some of the fish that we caught in Kazakhstan won't even fit across a bait puck. They were small enough to be some of the smaller speck minnows.
Yeah, like perch minnows.
That's small ones.
Crazy, man.
Mm-hmm.
Try hooking one of them. It's about impossible.
Well, the other thing that I'm worried about, you know, hey, I'm starting to get in my 40s here, and I watch the old guys out there. They're pulling out their cheaters, and I know that my good friend Randy Joppy was joking about having a bunch of guys out on his pond, and they were all turning their backs every day, and they had to tie one, and it's because they didn't want to show their buddies they were wearing their magnifying lenses, their cheater glasses. How do you even tie these things, Chad?
Well, with our fishing line, it's hard to tie some of these. You got to cut it at an angle. They're using such light line that they can actually get it through the hole, but most people can't even see the hole in these jigs to tie them on. When they look at my box, like, how do you tie it? Where's the knot go? I'm like, well, you see that little black piece? It's a little. They use little inserts. And you got to try to get the line through there. You don't want to do it on the ice. I can still do it because I'm only 30 and I can see good. But most of the guys, when we were in Kazakhstan, I went to 4 different people's rooms to tie on their jigs for them. Because they couldn't even do it with their glasses on. That's how small the holes are. It's about impossible.
Okay, so in your care package, we need a headlamp and jeweler's loops and things like that to get going on these. Now,
well, I know one of the guys is planning on bringing a fly tying magnifying, like the big lens with the lights on it. He's planning on bringing that to Belarus if he makes the team.
Well, if he doesn't make the team, I know Harbor Freight sells one. We can probably hook you up, Chad, if you need to be the hero to the old guys.
I don't need it
guys.
Yet. I can still do it.
Right. Now, what other stuff? I know the different rods.
Yeah, they're using palm rods and wrap rods. The wrap rod is the only thing I can think of that's similar is the old school pegged rods that the line was on two metal pegs. It's similar to that, but the whole rod is what, maybe 12 inches long with the spring bobber. It's got a reel on it too, but the reel is just to hold the line until they get their depth set. They lock the reel down, and then when they want to come up, they twist their right hand or their rod hand. They twist their rod hand and guide the line with their other hand.
You just kind of wobble it on.
And they wrap the line around these two pegs. That's how they reel a fish up like that. They change baits like that. They do, and when they move, they do that. It's to hide the movement of catching a fish is all it is. You don't even – I know when Mike Bodecker went to Poland, when he got done with his first heat, he told the team captain, Mike McNett, that I beat that guy. I didn't see him catch a fish. Well, that guy ended up winning that zone. He caught the most fish out of anybody.
Sneaky buggers.
Nobody even knew he had a bite.
Sneaky buggers.
Yep. It's all to minimize movement.
Man, this rod, what do they call it?
I think they call it a wrap rod. They make it.
Wrap rod. It sounds like a Klingon battle axe.
It's goofy looking. Steph's seen them up close. I think he has video camera of it. So we'll
you
see.
Get some pictures of that?
Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
All right,
they're
well,
unique.
We're going to have to get the Velder boys on building some of those maybe to give them a try. Yeah. Although, you know, I think that last night when I was out on Reed's Lake and I kept arching my back and pulling up those crappie that the other guys were getting plenty jealous.
Oh, yeah. Well, around here it's okay to let them know. You try to get in their head, then they don't fish as good. But overseas, these guys are all great. I mean, they're all the best fishermen that there are. You don't want them by you fishing.
They see you catch a fish, they're all going to come getting measurements off from your hole and just surround you and lock you in so you can't move.
Here come your five-meter friends.
Yep. And every inch around you.
And their brothers and sisters.
That's why you have two flags, to protect yourself. It's not to have two holes. It's to protect yourself so you can move around a spot that has fish.
Oh, my. Now, you said that these guys aren't, you know, setting on buckets.
No, they carry a metal box of some kind to hold their palm rods. Some of them carry a tote, kind of like a mechanic tote or a...
Mechanics or a janitor's painter, tote?
A paint tote, something like that. Just a big container that's got... They put a kind of pockets all around it, and then they can throw all their stuff in there. But a lot of them use a metal box that can hold their fish, hold their equipment. They can set on it if they need to. They can block the wind with it. And, I mean, they'll go out there with 80 to 100 rods, some of these guys will. A lot of them have about 40 or 50 palm rods with them, but some of them have 100 poles with them. Every one will be labeled with different lines matched to every teardrop and spring bobbers. They make their own out of Mylar, X-ray film, some kind of flimsy plastic. I mean, because using such a small teardrop, it's got to be able to bend. They want at least a 45-degree bend on the spring bobber, so to match up with this stuff, it's tough to do.
That's crazy. So I guess, you know, we're gonna have to get our guys building us some of this freaky equipment to just get up to speed on that. And it sounds like with if you're flying to Belarus, we're gonna have to worry about the weight considerations. So we may have to get into the high tech ultralight stuff. So if there's any of you guys out there that have a carbon fiber experience or something like that, get in contact with the ice guys, because you know, we want to make sure that Chad has a shot at that gold, individual gold medal next year and all this stuff. Was there anything else that was freaky and wild? I know that you were joking that you were trading with some of the guys.
Oh yeah, we do a lot of trade when it's over. Still trying to get one of those augers, and I wish I would have. But I got a Russian team jersey. I got magnets, home country magnets. And you just, like, I trained my name tag, got a fifth of vodka from Russia. You just, anything that you got pretty much, and people, I mean, it's just souvenirs. I mean, how often do you come to the U.S. from Russia, or how often do U.S. people go to Russia or something like that? So,
Steph, we're going to have to get some MI Ice Guys
any place
stuff
you can
to
get.
Send out with Chad so he can swap for some good stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yep. We usually trade, you know, sweatshirts, hats, you know. I know McNett last year traded an auger for a suit from Kazakhstan. I mean, some of the stuff people have been trying to get for years, too, and you got to bring something that they really want. It's tough to get some of the stuff off of these guys because they, I mean, it's a souvenir for them. You know, how often do you get on your country's team? So it's not something they want to really give up. We don't want to give up certain things. Like, I thought about offering my suit for somebody else's suit, but didn't quite pull the trigger on that. I would have for the auger, but I didn't. Our translator never got me an official deal set up, so we'll see. Maybe next year.
I wonder if the translator ended up with the auger.
No, no, nobody got it.
Oh, man, I'd love to see that auger. I'm going to have to look at Steph's pictures on that.
Titanium auger? Be awesome.
Yep. Lithuanian country had the same auger. They got them from Russia. I don't know. They only made a few, I guess. I don't know. It's probably, I heard that they're super expensive. They're made out of titanium, so they're lightweight, and they're custom.
Wow. Very, very aggressive. How many turns did it take to get through?
I think it was 4 or 5 turns faster.
Than the Finbore.
Yeah, so it was like 17, 18 turns. And those guys, they go by, it's chess game out there. If they can make you waste time, they gain time. That's how they look at it. They consider everybody good fishermen. It's about how much time can they make you waste.
Wow. Okay, that's a whole different fishing game than we do here in Michigan, other than we watch the guys drill holes on sandbars. But that's just humor. Well, guys, this has been awesome stuff. We've got to take another little break. So you guys have been listening to MI Ice Guys on MIIceGuys.com podcasting, hard water ice fishing in the Great Lakes State. Remember, put the app on your phone. Have it downloaded. Be ready to listen when you're on that long drive or if you're sitting out there on a bucket by yourself. Have some stuff stocked up. So when we come back, we're going to talk some more fishing. See ya. Hey, remember to stop on out to MIIceGuys.com and report the ice thickness where you're fishing. Help us all out in knowing where there's safe ice. Check out the map online at MIIceGuys.com. Hey guys, welcome back. We've been having a lot of fun talking about the worlds and some of Chad's adventures as he's been gone from us all year. We had a great plan that he was going to join us more often, but man, the fishing's just gotten his way, and that I can't say that's a bad thing. But one of the last things that we wanted to cover today is we're drawn to the close of the season, and every day I get people telling me, are you sure that ice is safe out there? And so I kind of want to let us all kind of expound on when is the last day of fishing? I know Chad said, hope it ain't soon.
It'll be a while, but...
And when we got to change out the tackle and move to the river, or some of us will go back to the little boats and sneaking out in the ponds and things like that. But
yeah, the river's calling. But, you know, that long-range forecast looks like we're going to have good ice for the next 3 weeks, you know, Grand Rapids North.
Yeah. You know. And, you know, I know that down the southern part of the state, for those of you listening down there, you know, maybe you got some lakes that are starting to lose it. And we mentioned earlier runoff lakes where the streams and the drains and things like that, or if you're near a parking lot or something like that, you got to kind of watch those edges. And as Steph and I found out a couple years ago when we made the Grand Rapids press for being the last two idiots out on the ice, a lot of people think that it quits earlier, and it does. But really, I think one of the first things that you notice is the edges are gone.
Yeah, the edges will start breaking up first.
Shore always goes first because the ground's heating the ice right there.
You got the ground heating it. You got runoff. Yep. If we get a rainstorm, then that runoff from that's going to melt out the edges, just like we did early season where we lost a little bit of edge ice and stuff.
Yep. You want to watch out for that honeycombed ice. That's what it'll start doing. Start being a lot of air pockets, a lot of holes in the ice. That's when you know it's getting real close.
It starts honeycombing, and it's like you're walking on a waterbed. It's time to leave off the ice.
Yep. Yeah, and you know you don't. I know that I'm guilty of taking the 2x8 and throwing it down to get out onto the ice and stuff like that. But guys, you got to be really careful when you start getting into that you are in the end of the ice. And I know Steph switches back to his floating suit.
Yep.
And a couple of years ago, Steph and I were out on Reed's Lake, and it was March 16th. And we were out there, and we're just stacking the crappies in the bucket. We were having a really good night, and all of a sudden we hear this chainsaw fire up. And I'm like, what the heck is that? I had my back turned to him. Steph says, there's some guys in big yellow suits over by the fire barn cutting a hole.
Yeah, right there at public safety.
Yeah, those guys spent like 20 minutes cutting a hole so they could practice their ice rescue.
Yep.
Because some poor kid had fallen through some pond with a sprinkler or a fountain in it or something like that. But you got to start paying attention here in the last ice. But that last ice, all that rinse down and stuff is bringing food down there. And the bite is awesome. The fish are really hitting because there's some fresh food coming in. There's also fresh water coming in, so that means the oxygen's coming back up.
Yeah, well, it's not just that. Fish are getting ready to spawn.
Yep.
So the last thing they want to do is do a heavy feed before they got to waste all that energy spawning. So they are on the take sometimes.
Well, it's just like deer hunting.
Yep.
They stock up before they go out and get horny.
Yep.
It's crazy.
A lot of big fish get caught this time of year, this and later. I mean, this is a big fish time of year. But you got to be careful.
You got to be careful. We don't want to lose any more fishermen than we have. I heard the report the other day that I think we're around 6 or 7 that we've lost this year. And I know it happens, but it doesn't mean I have to like it. But we want you guys to be careful out there. So I think it's time that we start talking, you know, maybe you got to put the spud back in the sled. And when you're walking out, put some good hard taps on it to make sure. And if it's that honeycombed ice and it goes halfway through and hits a pocket, you're going to know it. And that might be, you know, there's going to come that day when it's a better idea to go to the bar than go out on the lake.
Hopefully it's not soon, but it doesn't look like it.
Well, some other things that we want you to be very careful about while you're out there is dressing appropriately, because a lot of times you're going to get surface water out there. And if you slip, fall, and get wet, now hypothermia on top of the ice can actually be an issue. I know that when we were out on early ice, I took a header one day and got wet. But fortunately, I had the right clothes on that kept me from getting hypothermia and cold, because it kept that off me. The waterproof suits are a good theory on that. Multiple layers is a good theory on that.
Yeah, a lot of the new suits have that. They're waterproof. They got padded knees and everything else in them. So they're going to keep you dry out there when you're kneeling down at that tip up or at your fishing hole, landing that big one.
Yep. And also the taller boots as you get a little bit of slush on top of the ice and stuff like that.
Yep. Good waterproof pair of boots.
And thing to remember, too, is this late season, this ice starts melting on top and it can become slicker and greased lightning out there.
Yeah.
So a good pair of micro spikes or crampons is definitely necessary.
Yeah, because you don't want to be the guy with the busted knee or the busted tailbone coming off the ice. And how'd that happen? Well, it fell in my butt ice fishing.
Yep, it doesn't feel good. I broke my tailbone steelhead fishing at Tippy. There's a lot of steps over there on the hillside. I missed a few of them.
He missed one and went down 10 in like a half a second.
And it hurts.
Landed right on his bottom. Yeah.
I didn't break anything but my tailbone. None of the fishing equipment got broke.
at least you saved the good stuff.
I fished all day still, and the next day.
Now, one of those other things that I thought maybe we'd touch on, and we touched on this early season, is flaying fish. Now, we were just joking about some of our friends and saying how long it was going to take them to flay out some fish. And there's some different techniques. I know that with some fish, I still like to scale. And a lot of the fish, I skin them. And if you guys aren't familiar with those techniques, or maybe you're not really getting as much meat out of them as you thought, I think one of the good ways to do it is get out there on YouTube.
Yep, there's a lot of good sites on YouTube showing you how to clean different types of fish.
I know Steph had touched on his new way to stake out a pike and, you know, skinning a crappie, as we're going to do. Is a really good way to make sure that you got some good fish for the family, because there's nothing like being able to go home and show off, look what I got, and actually being able to put it on the plate.
I had fish last night. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's on my menu here this week.
Like the other night when you and I were out and Mike had 2 fish. It's like, you can't go home with 2 fish to clean. It's like, here.
Yep, got to put somebody's bucket. If you don't have time to clean, find somebody that does.
Dad can't go home with two fish to feed his.
Oh, with the five kids he's got? Yeah, yeah, no doubt. Well, guys, we've had a great time today talking nice fishing, podcasting. I think we've got another episode coming out yet before the melt, or maybe right after the melt. Mm-hmm. So check out those back episodes if you haven't. Check out our pictures, and Steph's promised that he's got some footage that we're going to be able to get posted up there on the site of Chad dancing around with his medal on and things like that, and racing to holes and using these fancy augers, and maybe even a good picture of that Russian auger, and maybe one of our good Michigan manufacturing guys will figure out how to make something sneaky like that.
U.S.-made titanium auger.
It'd be phenomenal. I hope that Jim and Jack are listening down there at K&E and can find somebody that can get into this kind of stuff. But you've been listening to the MI Ice Guys, podcasting hard water fishing for the Great Lakes State on the internet. It's free. Join us every time that we get one out there. Put it on your phone and enjoy. So until we talk again, be safe on the ice. MI Ice Guys would like to thank you for joining us once again for one of our podcasts. Be sure to subscribe on miiceguys.com so that you don't miss any of our tips and hear a little bit about our fishing stories. Be safe out there, guys, and enjoy the fishing. It may thaw soon.